Most of those who believe they should stop find it very difficult to do so. They find it's become a deeply ingrained habit, a habit they can't change just because they want to.
Lovely day, isn't it?
Tis that.
Are you here on holiday, or...?
No, I live here.
Oh, jolly good. there's our sheep, aren't they? Yes, of course, I thought so. why are they up in the trees?
A fair question, and one that in recent weeks has been much on my mind. Is my considered opinion that they're nesting.
Nesting? Like birds?
Exactly. Birds is the key to the old problem. It's my belief that these sheep are labouring under the misapprehension that they're birds. Observe their behaviour. Take for a start the sheep's tendency to hop about the field on their back legs. Now witness their attempts to fly from tree to tree. Notice they do not so much fly as plummet. Observe, for example, that ewe in that oak tree. She is clearly trying to teach her lamb to fly. Talk about the blind leading the blind.
But why do they think they're birds?
Another fair question. One thing is for sure, a sheep is not a creature of the air. It has enormous difficulty in the comparatively simple act of perching. As you see. As for flight, its body is totally unadapted to the problems of aviation. Trouble is, sheep are very dim. And once they get an idea into their heads, there's no shifting it.
But where do they get the idea from?
From Harold. He's that sheep over there under the elm. He's that most dangerous of animals, a clever sheep. He's the ringleader. He's realised that a sheep's life consists of standing around for a few months and then being eaten. And that's a depressing prospect for an ambitious sheep. He's patently hit on the idea of escape.
Why don't you just get rid of Harold?
Because of the enormous commercial possibilities should he succeed.
And what exactly are the commercial possibilities of avine aviation?
Bonsoir, ici nous avons les dirhams modernes du mouton anglo-français. Ce n'est pas le bon échevel et pépé le pompon. Maintenant, quand le U lève le bas, comme ça, nous avons dans la tête le cabine.
Ah bon.
Ici, où se trouve le petit capitaine anglais, Monsieur Trabshaw.
Vive Brian, whatever you are.
D'accord. Maintenant, je vous présente mon collègue, le pouf célèbre, Jean-Brian Jadapati.
Et maintenant, j'ai le mouton, mais je voulais vous aller, j'ai le mouton de l'intègre pendant les wheels. Bon!
Bon, les wheels, ici!
C'est formidable, n'est-ce pas? Et bon, où? Ah! Après, je suis allé, de l'imagine, de l'avion, de la derrière du mouton, bon. Tchouk, tchouk, tchouk.
Merci beaucoup! Suivez la piste.
Ah, tais-toi, bien.
Ah, pardon.
Mais. Où sont les bagages? Ou le voyageur?
Le voyageur.
Casse pas.
non, encore la mais comme ça, mais comme ça. Démonstration, fantastique. Oh. Sur toi. Un, deux, trois.
How do you get on with these French people?
Oh, very well.
So do I.
Me too.
Service mistake.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes, I like them. I mean, they think well, don't they? I mean, be fair, Pascal.
Mm-hmm. Please, Pascal. Mm-hmm.
Jean-Paul Sartre. Yes, Voltaire.
Oh, René Descartes.
And now for something completely different. A man with three buttocks.
Good evening. I have with me Mr. Arthur Frampton, who has... Mr. Frampton, I understand that you, as it were, have... Well, let me put it another way. I believe, Mr. Frampton, that whereas most people have two, you...
What are we?
Ah, yes, yes, I see. Are you quite comfortable?
Yes, fine, thank you.
Mr. Frampton, vis-à-vis your rump.
I beg your pardon?
Your rump.
What?
Your posterior. Derrière. Sit upon.
What's that?
Buttons.
Oh, me bum!
Well, Mr. Frampton, I understand, Mr. Frampton, that you have a 50% bonus in the region of what you said.
I've got three cheeks.
Yes, yes, spin. Well, we were wondering, Mr. Frampton, if you could see your way clear.
Yeah, what's that camera doing?
Nothing at all, Mr. We were wondering if you could see your way clear to giving us a quick visual. Mr. Frampton, will you take your trousers down?
What? Get off! I'm not taking my trousers off on television. Don't you think I am?
Please take them down.
No.
Just a little bit.
No.
Now, look here, Mr. Frampton. It's perfectly easy for somebody just to come along here to the BBC, simply claiming that they have a bit to spare in the body department. The point is, Mr. Frampton, our viewers need proof.
I've been on Persian radio.
Get off!
Well, the figures know they've got three buttocks.
How?
We go cycling together.
Struth!
And now for something completely different. A man with three buttocks.
Good evening. I have with me Mr. Arthur Frampton, who... Mr. Frampton, I understand that you, as it were, have... Let me put it another way. I believe, Mr. Frampton, that whereas most people...
We do this just now.
Oh, yes.
Well, why didn't you say so?
I thought it was a continental version.
And now for something completely the same. A man with three buttocks. Hello? Oh, did we? And now for something completely different. A man with three noses.
Oh, he's not here yet.
Two noses?
Wasn't she just great, eh? Wasn't she just great? And she can run as fast as she can sing. And I'm telling you, because I know. No, only kidding. Seriously, now, ladies and gentlemen, we have for you one of the most unique acts in the world today. Well, I'll say no more. Just let you see for yourselves. Ladies and gentlemen, my very great privilege to introduce... Arthur Ewing and his musical mice!
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I have in this box 23 white mice. Mice which have been painstakingly trained over the past few years to squeak at a selected pitch. This is E sharp, and this one is G. You get the general idea. Now, these mice are so arranged upon this rack that when played in the correct order, they will squeak the bells of St. Mary. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you, on the mass organ, the bells of St. Mary. Thank you.
Guidance counsellor?
Yes, good morning.
Morning, sir.
And good morning to you, madam. Name?
Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Pewty. Pewty.
And what is the name of your ravishing wife? Wait, don't tell me. It's something to do with moonlight. It goes with her eyes. It's soft and gentle, warm and yielding, deeply lyrical and yet tender and frightened like a tiny white rabbit.
It's Deirdre.
Deirdre, what a beautiful name. What a beautiful, beautiful name. And what seems to be the trouble with your marriage, Mr. Pewty?
Well, it all started about 5 years ago. We started going on holiday to Brighton together. Deirdre, that's my wife, has always been a very good companion to me. Well, I never particularly anticipated any marital strife. Indeed, the very idea of consulting a professional marital advisor has always been of the greatest repugnance to me. Although, far be it from me to impugn the nature of your trade or profession.
Do go on.
Well, as I say, we've always been good friends, sharing the interest, the gardening and so on, the model aeroplanes, the sixpenny bottle for the holiday money, and indeed, twice a month, settling down of an evening to do the accounts, something which Deirdre, that's my wife, particularly look forward to on account of her feet. I should probably have said at the outset that I'm noted to having something of a sense of humour, although I've kept myself very much to myself over the last 2 years, notwithstanding, as it were, and it's only as comparatively recently that I've begun to realise, well, perhaps realise is not the correct word, imagine that I was not the only thing in her life.
You suspected your wife?
Well, yes. At first, frankly, yes. Her behaviour did seem, at the time, to me, who was, after all, there to see, to be a little odd.
Odd?
Yes, well, to a certain extent, yes. I'm not by nature a suspicious person, far from it. In fact, I have something of a reputation as an after-dinner speaker, if you take my meaning.
Yes, I certainly do.
Yeah. Anyway, the area where I'm known, people, in fact, know me extremely well.
Right. You hold it. Thank you.
Yes. Anyway, as I said, I must learn to face up to the facts. Stop beating about the bush, or I'll never look myself in the bathroom mirror again. Anyway, so...
Would you mind running along for 10 minutes?
No.
Make it half an hour.
Right, okay, fine. Yes. I'll wait outside, shall I? Yes, well, that's perhaps the best thing. Yes. Certainly put my mind at rest on one or two points there.
Now, what, though, stranger? A man can run and run for year after year, but he realizes that what he's running from is himself.
Gosh.
Now, a man's got to do what a man's got to do, and there ain't no sense in running. Now, you got to turn, and you got to fight, and you got to hold your head up high.
Yes.
Now, you go back in there, my son, and be a man. Walk tall.
Yes. I will. I've been pushed around long enough. This is it. This is your moment, Arthur Pewty. This is it, Arthur Pewty. At last, you're a man. All right, Deirdre, come out of there.
Go away.
Right.
So much for paper.
Ha ha ha!
These historic pictures of Queen Victoria, taken in 1880 at Osborne, show the Queen with Gladstone. This unique film provides a rare glimpse into the private world of a woman who ruled half the earth. The commentary, recorded on the earliest wax cylinders, is spoken by Alfred Lord Tennyson, the poet laureate.
Well, hello, it's the wacky Queen again. And who's the other fella? It's Willie Gladstone. And when these two way-out wacky characters get together, there's fun aplenty. And, uh-oh, there's a hosepipe. This means trouble for somebody. Uh-oh, Charlie Gardner's fallen for that old trick. Queenie's put him in a heap of trouble. Uh-oh, that's one in the eye for Willie. Here, you have a look. Well, doggone it. Where's that one? Uh-oh, there it is, all over his face. Well, hello, what's Britain's wacky queen up to now? Well, she's certainly not sitting on the fence. She's painting it. Surely nothing can go wrong here. Uh-oh, here's the PM coming back for more. And he certainly gets it. Well, that's one way to get the housework done.
Bloody time, if you ask me.
Aren't you pleased to see me, Father?
Yes, of course he's pleased to see you, Kenny.
All right, woman, all right. I've got a tongue in my head. I'll do talking. Bye. I like your fancy suit. Is that what they're wearing up in Yorkshire now?
It's just an ordinary suit, Father. It's all I've got apart from the overalls.
How are you like it down the mine, Ken?
Oh, it's not too bad, Mum. We're using some new tungsten carbide drills for the preliminary coalface scouring operations.
Oh, that sounds nice, dear.
Tungsten carbide drills? What the bloody hell's tungsten carbide drills?
It's something they use in coal mining, Father.
It's something they use in coal mining, Father. You bloody fancy talk since you left London.
Not that again.
He's had a hard day, dear. His new play opens at National Theatre tomorrow.
Oh, that's good.
Good? Good? What do you know about it? What do you know about getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to fly to Paris, back at the old Vic for drinks at 12, sweating the day through press interviews, television interviews, then getting back here at 10 to wrestle with the problem of an almost sexual nymphomaniac drug addict involved in the ritual murder of a well-known Scottish footballer? That's a full working day, lad. And don't you forget it!
Oh, don't shout at the boy, Father.
Hampstead wasn't good enough for you, was it? You had to go poncing off to Barnsley. You and your coal mining friends.
Coal mining is a wonderful thing, Father.
Yeah.
But it's something you'll never understand. Just look at you.
Oh, Ken, be careful. You know what he's like after a few novels.
Come on, lad. Come on. Out with it. What's wrong with me? Yeah, tit.
I'll tell you what's wrong with you. Your head's addled with novels and poems. You come home every evening reeling of Chateau Latour.
Oh, don't.
And look what you've done to Mother. She's worn out with meeting film stars, attending premieres and giving gala luncheons.
There's nothing wrong with gala luncheons, lad. I've had more gala luncheons than you've had hot dinners.
Oh, please.
Oh, no.
What is it?
Oh, it's his writer's cramp.
You never told me about this.
No, we didn't like to, Kenny.
I'm all right, woman. Just get him out of here.
Oh, Ken, you'd better go.
All right, I'm going.
After all we've done for him.
One day you'll realise there's more to life than culture. There's dirt and smoke and good honest
sweat. Get out! Get out, you labourer! Hey, you know, Mother, I think there's a play there. Get Agent on phone.
Aye, I think you're right, Frank. It could express
It could express a vital theme of our age. Oh, shut up! Shut up!
Well, that's better. Now, for something completely different, a man with three buttocks.
We've gone back!
Oh, all right, all right! A man with nine legs.
He ran away.
Oh, bloody hell. A Scotsman on a horse.
And welcome once again to the epilogue. On the programme this evening, we have Monsignor Edward Gay, visiting pastoral emissary of the Somerset Theological College and author of a number of books about belief, the most recent of which is the bestseller My God. And opposite him, we have Dr. Tom Jack, humanist, broadcaster, lecturer, and author of the book Hello, Sailor. Tonight, instead of discussing the existence or non-existence of God, they have decided to fight for it. The existence or non-existence to be determined by two falls, two submissions, or a knockout. All right, boys, let's get to it. Your master of ceremonies for this evening, Mr. Arthur Waring.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a three-round contest of the epilogue. Introducing on my right, in the blue corner, appearing for Jehovah, the ever-popular Monsignor Eddie Gay. And on my left, in the red corner, author of the book The Problems of Kierkegaard and Hello, Sailor, and visiting professor of modern theological philosophy at the University of East Anglia, from Wigan, Dr. Tom Jack.
Now, Dr. John Scott, a flying mare there, what's he doing? And this is going to be a full body slam. And is he going to pin? No, he's standing back. Well, there we are, leaving the epilogue for the moment. We'll be bringing you the result of this discussion later on in the programme.
Yes, the mouse problem. This week, the world around us looks at the growing social phenomenon of mice and men. What makes a man want to be a mouse?
Well, it's not a question of wanting to be a mouse. It just sort of happens to you. All of a sudden, you realize that's what you want to be.
And when did you first notice these, shall we say, tendencies?
Well, I was about 17, and some mates and me went to a party. And, we had quite a lot to drink, and then some of the fellas there started handing cheese around. Well, just out of curiosity, I tried a bit, and, well, that was that.
And what else did these fellows do?
Well, some of them started dressing up as mice a bit. And then when they got the costumes on, they started squeaking.
And was that all?
That was all.
And what was your reaction to this?
Well, I was shocked.
Yes.
But gradually I came to feel that I was more at ease with other mice.
A typical case, whom we shall refer to as Mr. A, although his real name is this.
Arthur Jackson, 32A Milton Avenue, Hounslow, Middlesex.
What is it that attracts someone like Mr. A to this way of life? I have with me a consultant psychiatrist.
Well, we've just heard a typical case history. I myself have over 700 similar histories, all fully documented. Would you care to choose one? Mr. Arthur Aldridge of Leamington.
Well, that's amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you, Janet.
Cargol, speaking as a psychiatrist as opposed to a conjurer...
Oh.
What makes certain men want to be mice?
Well, we psychiatrists have found that over 8% of the population will always be mice. I mean, after all, there's something of the mouse in all of us. I mean, how many of us can honestly say that at one time or another he hasn't felt sexually attracted to mice? I know I have. I mean, most normal adolescents go through a stage of squeaking two or three times a day. Most youngsters, on the other hand, some youngsters, are attracted to it by its very illegality. It's like murder. Make a thing illegal, and it acquires a mystique. Look at arson. I mean, how many of us can honestly say that at one time or another he hasn't set fire to some great public building? I know I have. The only way to bring the crime figures down is to reduce the number of offences. Get it out in the open. I know I have.
The amazing Cargol and Janet. What a lot of people don't realise is that a mouse, once accepted, can fulfil a very useful role in society. Indeed, there are examples throughout history of famous men now known to have been mice.
Vene, vidi, vici.
And of course, Hilaire Belloc. But what is the attitude
of the man in the street towards
this growing social problem?
I'll clamp down on them.
How?
I'll strangle them.
Well, speaking as a member of the stock exchange, I would suck their brains out with a straw, sell the widows and orphans, and go into South American Zinc.
Yeah, I'd stuff sparrows down their throats until their beaks duck out through the stomach walls.
Oh, well, I'm a tottered accountant and consequently too boring to be of interest.
I feel that these poor, unfortunate people should be free to live the lives of their own choice.
I'd split their nostrils open with a boat hook, I think.
Oh, well, I mean, they can't help it, can they? But, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it, so I'd kill them.
Clearly, the British public's view is a hostile one. Hostile.
Hostile.
But perhaps this is because so little is generally known of these mice men. We have some film now of taken at one of the notorious weekend mouse parties where these disgusting little perverts meet. Mr. A tells us what actually goes on at these mouse parties.
Well, first of all, you get shown to your own private hole in the skirting board. Then you put the mask in on. Then you scurry into the main room and perhaps take a run in the wheel.
The remainder of this film was taken secretly at one of these mouse parties by a BBC cameraman posing as a vole. As usual, we apologise for the poor quality of the film.
Well, then you steal some cheese, brie or camembert or cheddar or gouda if you're on the art of stuff. You might go and see one of the blue cheese films. Then there's a big clock in the middle of the room, and about 12:50 you climb up it, and then eventually it strikes one and you all run down.
And what's that?
That's the farmer's wife.
Perhaps we need to know more of these mice men before we can really judge them. Perhaps not. Anyway, our 30 minutes are up. Good night.
Here is the result of the epilogue, God Exists, by Two Falls to a Submission.